Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Monday! Hope you had a great freaking weekend, man. Couldn't decide if I wanted to say fucking or freaking. Went with the freaking. Sounds like a street fighter. Sounds like what you how you counter a Hadouken with a faruking freaking. Man, I haven't slept much this weekend. What a weekend it was. What a Super Bowl. What a Sunday fun day, huh? And now here we are at the start of another week. And my final week in LA before I hit the road and go on tour with Adam Devine for 3 weeks. February 11th to March 4th, baby. We're going all over the country. If you haven't gotten your tickets at livenation.com, do it. We're going to Detroit, Wisconsin, Iowa, Kansas, Aspen, San Fran, Eugene, Oregon, ending in Los Angeles. So get your tickets at livenation.com and come see us. Today's episode is a very special episode. It's my stepdad. George Cox, quite the fella. Not only did he, come in my life in a time when I was leaving for college, and a time when my mom was by herself, and that was making it very tough for me to leave to come down to LA and go to school. And my mom met George when he actually converted to Judaism, and they met at our temple. And the rest is history. You know, he's one of the greatest dudes you'll ever meet, aside from being a West Point grad and a high-up broker at Morgan Stanley in Seattle. He's a master of puns and just like the sweetest dude ever, a huge fan of vintage cars and sports, which was a big thing for me when I found out he was a big sports guy, because we watch a lot of basketball and football together, and that's key for male bonding. You know, had he like been way into figure skating or ping pong, I would have adjusted. You know, I love ping pong. I love figure skating. Not as much as football and basketball. But anyway, great dude. Makes my mom super happy. Makes me happy. And on top of all that, he has started an amazing foundation called the Alexander Hamilton Scholars Association, which is an organization that gives scholarships to unbelievable high school, underprivileged high school kids across the country. There are just thousands of amazing teenagers that are doing well in very unfortunate situations, and it's inspiring as much as it is disheartening. But George started this organization, and I think they're now in their, I want to say, 9th or 10th year. But it's an unbelievable thing, and if you want to donate to it, which I highly recommend you do, if you're looking to, you know, make a difference somewhere, it's hamiltonscholars.org. Has all the information, stories, videos, and give a little bit of money. And if you help some kids, who are killing it, help them kill a little bit more as they continue to help change our world. Anyway, this episode, so fun, so interesting, and, of course, personal. You know, it's always fun when Brad and I can have someone close to us on the podcast, a relative that, gets to also share a little bit more insight into who we are as people. Huh? All right. George doesn't have a Twitter, which, I don't know if we can get him on there, but, he does have a Facebook. So hit him up on facebook.com/George Cox. Let him know how much you enjoyed the episode. Post on his wall, hit him up, tell him you love him. And if you got any good puns for him, but he might be the quickest pun in the West. It's unbelievable. One time he came to my apartment, my senior year of college, right after he'd seen me in a play, and there was like some rusty nail on our table, and he picked it up and goes, "Well, Adam, you really nailed the part." I was like, "Okay, good thing you and my mom are already married, because that was bad." But usually he swings for the fence and hits, I'd say about 97% of the time. Anyway, follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. AdamRayTV.com for all my tour dates. I'll be in LA all this week. And then we go to Detroit on Saturday to do the Fillmore Theater, first night of the Adam Devine tour. But I'm at the Laugh Factory this week, Comedy Store, Improv. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. A lot of live pod dates coming up too. Brad and I are going to be in Utah on March 8th. We're going to be at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival April 20th through the 22nd in Austin, Texas. And then some new dates added, the Crapshoot Comedy Festival in Vegas. First time festival in Vegas in May. I don't know the exact dates, but that's all on my website, AdamRightTV.com. And of course, after the Adam Devine tour, I'll be at Gotham in New York in March. Addison Improv coming to Dallas with Amir K. And then St. Louis Funny Bone end of March. All those tickets, AdamRightTV.com. Brad Williams, he is taking, I think, a week off, 2 weeks off. But February 16th through the 18th, he'll be in Syracuse at the Funny Bone, at the Syracuse Funny Bone, February 16th through the 18th. And then in Raleigh, North Carolina, Brad will be at Goodnight's Comedy Club, February 23rd through the 25th. Get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Of course, the merch, we are in transition. We'll have the new store up very shortly. Brad is working very diligently on that. So all your ALN merch needs will be fulfilled. But in the meantime, if you need them, email aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com and Brad will send you shirts, hats, whatever you need. I think that's it, man. It's a lot of great eps on the horizon. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends. TJ Miller coming up. Judd Apatow coming up. Joey Diaz coming up. A lot of heavy hitters. And also, I will be live streaming and podcasting from the road with Adam Devine. So you want to make sure you subscribe to hear those daily updates. Also, if you haven't yet subscribed to my other podcast, Good Call with Josh Wolf, former guest of the ALN podcast. It's a sports comedy podcast without all the numbers and analytics. We just had Jonathan Coachman on, the ESPN sports anchor. Michelle Beadle from Sports Nation is our guest next week. We'll be featured on iTunes for that. So make sure you're subscribed to the Good Call podcast on iTunes and tell your friends. All right? I think that's it. So now that we got the tour dates out of the way, that's the merch info. Those are the Twitter handles. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with my stepdad, the man, George Cox.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast. Dinner or breakfast, Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
That sounds like a basic instruction. You know, be a couple inches away from the microphone. You have no idea how many professional comedians, actors, radio show hosts we have it here that are...
You know, they start talking back here. They get pretty comfortable.
And then we have to tell them, why don't you hug that mic a little bit? And it's just weird when you have to tell, like...
So if I get up here, it's not a good idea. Yeah, got it. Okay, that's cool.
Do you like the sound of your own voice?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll find out, I guess. Yeah.
I've always thought you've had a good speaking voice, which I feel like if you're doing any sort of public speaking, after a while, you must know that, and people are receptive, that you do have a... voice that's easy on the ears.
You know, when I was when I started my career in financial services, which I, you know, had a long career in that field, one of the things I learned, I started cold calling. You know, I was calling little old ladies in Magnolia.
Oh, really?
Know? Yeah, yeah. And
saying what?
What I found was that the way you handled it was you met the cadence of their voice. So if they spoke fast, you'd speak a little faster. And if they said, well, how are you? You'd kind of slow down. And that kind of worked.
Wow.
Sure. And that's a tip that can also relate to the world of stand-up comedy. You know, if Adam, if we go on stage and the audience is
drunk,
sort of drunk and wild and hectic, we have to you can't go on and act like a high school principal and be like, now, calm down.
Yeah.
We're going to have a good time tonight. I don't know why I did a minor Obama impression right there, but...
you have to read the room.
Yeah.
Trust me, financial service is nothing but stand-up comedy. Unless it's stand-up tragedy. I mean, one or the other.
Yeah.
Or both.
And you're at Morgan Stanley, correct? Or you were?
Oh, can't say it. Yeah, we'll cut it out.
Cut that part out. Yeah,
so you've been in financial services for how long?
It's been about 30 years.
Yeah.
And long enough to know better.
Long enough to go like, oh, man, I should have been an ice cream man.
No. But I tell you, you know how to make a small fortune in the market?
How's that?
Well, give me a large fortune, and I'll show you.
There you go. That's called a money joke, people.
Yeah.
Now,
he's a king of puns and wordplay jokes.
Oh, man.
Oh, you like the speed in which he comes up with puns and jokes that play on words. If I could come up with an hour at that rate, or just like good jokes in general, like I would do a new hour every 3 months.
The You'll like this then. My dad used to collect Time magazine, and he'd have these big stacks of them.
Yeah.
And I walked into his office one day, and he was getting them all together to throw out. And there's three like huge, just massive stacks of Time magazine, and they're all stacked really, really close together. And I go, "Dad, what are those?" And he goes, "Those are the pressing issues of our times."
Oh God, that's pretty good. Well, I was going to say that the problem with Time is that it's a misnomer because it gives you the news for the week. So
right, and especially now when we're in a news instant. People aren't satisfied about reading about something that happened a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of reading very papers strange. And magazines, that was your first job, right? A paper route.
Yeah, I got up at 4 in the morning, and my shoulders are still drooping because of it.
How old were you when you did that?
I started at 13.
Jeez. Wow. And then what made you, did your parents say get a job? Did your parent, or was that just sort of something in you that wanted to save up to buy something, or... What was it that made you start going to work at age 13?
At age 13, when I was a kid, if you wanted something other than lunch money,
mm-hmm.
which was a gift, I mean, most people didn't have that.
Yeah.
Then you had to do something. So I got a paper out.
And how many houses?
Back then, people actually read the paper.
Yeah. So people were excited when you showed up. You were like a celebrity in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know about a celebrity.
Well, depending on how fast and accurate you threw the papers.
Not when I came every week to collect the 45 cents.
Oh, wow. A massive 45 cents.
45 cents, yeah.
Wow.
I went home with a fistful of 50 cent pieces.
There you go.
And what would you, was there something, like, I remember when I got my first job at Albertsons, bagging groceries, when I got my first check, I was very excited to, like, go... Like, take a girl out, like, with that money. Like, what was, like, when you made your first, I don't know, $10, like, what were you like? All right, here's what I'm going to go, like Charlie Bucket and Willy Wonka, were you going to go get a chocolate bar?
No, I think I went to see the Tulsa Oilers AA baseball team.
Nice. There you go. That's a solid investment.
2 miles. And 13 is a little young for, you know.
Taking a girl
getting
out.
Getting in the car and going.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Even today, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like, but I do like the fact that you had that work ethic, and I don't know if that was instilled in you or if that was just what people did, that at age 13 you're still like, I would like to buy something. Okay, I'm going to get a job. I feel that nowadays kids are like, I would like to buy something at age 13, and they go, well,
where's my money?
Yeah, someone should give it to me. I've earned it by breathing.
Some.
Yeah.
There are those that are like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, your experience with, I guess, would you call a lot of the kids who were part of the Hamilton and Friends organization, would you call them millennials, or would you?
Well, they have been to date. I mean, the organization was started. I founded it in 2004. It's called Alexander Hamilton Scholars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Founded it in 2004. And the first young people that won the award, which the first year was 2005, they would have been... been born in 88 or 89.
Yeah.
So they're clearly millennials. Now, the ones that will win the award next year, those young people will have been born in 2000, 2001.
Oh, wow.
And I think now you're looking at whatever the post-millennial year is. The millennials are starting to be all in the workforce.
Yeah.
You know, the youngest millennial is out of high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What, now, so I don't know what the next generation called, but we can probably define that right here.
Yeah.
You know.
According to my dad, they already have a name. It's called Lazy.
Well, it could be the trumped up generation.
Oh, I like that. Or maybe I don't. I don't know. It's kind of scary either way.
Now,
this charity. Hamilton Scholarship. What made you
Hamilton
want to start
Scholars,
it?
Hamilton Scholars.
Oh, yeah. Hamilton Scholars.
That basically, I felt like I'd got to a point in my life I wanted to give back and do something.
Mm-hmm.
Always been interested in education. So, look at education. What can I do?
Yeah, this guy goes to bookshops and buys spelling books. Like, your library is, right? Like, you're a history buff, you're a spelling buff,
I got these old textbooks.
Old textbooks from, the 50s.
It goes back, from the 1850s.
Jesus. Whoa.
You know, you had to stand erect with a pointer, and march to the to the blackboard and do your what they call recitation.
That's yeah,
pretty mm-hmm. amazing. All these rules are in this old textbook. Pretty cool.
See, some people walk by a hustler and get excited.
You should
excited
do that
for
in your stand-up routine. You know, have a pointer and say, okay, now laugh. You know?
If a joke's really bombing.
Sure.
See, some people walk by a hustler store and see fuzzy handcuffs and get excited. He sees yeah. a textbook, a math book from 1845 and
yeah,
goes...
Yeah, that's pretty cool for me.
Okay, so education on a whole is...
Yeah, education on a whole was something I was really interested in. Mm-hmm. And so basically, that's one set.
Yeah.
The question was, what do you do, though? And it sort of happened separately. I was noticing in the workplace that young people coming out of college didn't really have much of a clue about what the real workplace was all about. So
sure,
that's one thing. And yeah. and so I started looking into it, and I realized a couple things. First of all, there was a real disconnect from high school to college and from college to the workplace. And the other thing was, unlike earlier times when education was kind of jumbled up with apprenticeship stuff and that sort of thing, young people are pretty much with their own generation, mm-hmm. with their own age group, really, from early on, really late childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Until maybe your early 20s.
Yeah, and you said
that's a disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah, and you talk about how they're not young people are not necessarily prepared for the workplace after after college. I certainly agree with you because I know that when I started working, my dad I got a checkbook and he's like, "All right, now you got to balance your checkbook." And I'm like, "Okay, well, how the hell do you do that?"
Yeah.
Because it's like I was never taught that. In high school and college, you're not taught that. You're not taught about investing, setting up 401k, health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, things like that that you might actually need. You're like, well, but I can tell you where the appendix is on a frog. And yeah. man, can I do that well.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Appendix on a frog. I can't do that. I didn't take biology. I took typing instead. So that was.
They didn't have biology when you were in school?
No, I never took biology. Well, they did.
Yeah.
I had a choice, biology or typing.
Yeah.
So I guess I didn't like an appendix on a frog.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, typing, in terms of real world experience,
it's a universal applicable.
Yeah, typing
skill.
Might be the best class I ever took.
Yeah,
in terms of like what has helped me.
What's helped you
as an adult? You know, I mean, maybe Spanish, but for the most part, typing. That's
there you go.
I use it every day.
Everybody uses typing one way or the other, either the hunt and peck or the real thing.
Yeah.
So basically, that was the first thing. The other thing was more historical. I'd always been I'd been fascinated by Hamilton, and I
not the musical.
Fascinated by that. That's true. Yeah. That's pretty good too.
Yeah,
you know? I don't know much about rap, but boy, it's a great musical.
Well, not with that attitude. You know quite a bit about rap.
Well, but when America had followed Hamiltonian ideas, we tended to do better. And what I mean by that is the notion of having people in leadership who have strong principles, have people in leadership who understand that we are one nation as opposed to individual states,
mm-hmm.
Having a sense of the whole, that's one thing. And there's a lot of little things that go into it, but basically when you think about our most Hamiltonian presidents, Lincoln comes to mind, both Roosevelts, although some people would say Franklin Roosevelt was both Jeffersonian and Hamilton. I don't know, whatever. But but at least the way I was thinking, and it was just kind of my conclusion, I kind of got a kick out of Hamilton. He was kind of cool. Besides, here was a immigrant kid who
from the Bahamas?
From a place called Nevis, but near, you know, south, what would it be, southeast of the Bahamas.
Okay, okay. So the islands,
He didn't have anything. He was essentially orphaned by the time he was 12, and 15 years later he's helping write the Constitution. I mean,
Jesus.
Hello.
Yeah, exactly. That's a pretty interesting
life.
Cool, and you pretty much set up
illegal immigrant, by the way.
Yeah.
That's like me being Wolverine and then motorboating Sandra Bullock 5 years later.
I mean, yeah, pretty just about the exact same thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
I've done just as much for this country.
So in like 250 years, someone will write a really cool musical about you. I'm gonna love the hip hop song about you motorboating Sandra Bullock. That'd be fantastic.
Adam and the Wolverine. Here he comes, mighty keen.
That's actually a great story.
But
so Hamilton. So then that's your fascination with him and who he was and what he stood for
right.
seemed like it could tie into the kids of today. Yeah,
and also I have this tendency to make things extremely complicated.
Sure.
So this is one way to do that. So basically, what I thought, well, why don't we just figure out a program that kind of takes young people that are kind of like the young Alexander Alexandras of the world and kind of work with them late high school through college and see what we come up with. And that's kind of what happened.
That's pretty ambitious to start something from the ground up like that. But I guess you've always, to sit down and go, to have the idea is one thing, and then to start to figure out the plan and how you're going to put it into action, and then to actually do it. And now we're sitting here how many years later?
Well, it's about 12 years now.
Yeah. Have you
met up with some of the first kids that were in the program that,
yeah.
you know, 12
yeah,
years
ones,
later?
We're starting to really get some feedback. I think one of the,
tell Brad exactly what it
works. Yeah, the way it works, there's a national application. It's online right now at hamiltonscholars.org. And if you're junior in high school, you could apply. Okay, you need to be from a K-12 accredited school. That's it. Mm-hmm. And high achieving, service oriented, and low income. That's what Hamilton was. High achieving, service oriented, low income kid who happened to be from another country.
Yeah.
Showed up on a doorstep and said, "Hey, I want to write the Constitution." That's okay. Okay, do it. Fine.
And then, essentially set up the modern banking system too. Like,
You can really bank on that.
Yeah. Oh boy,
there he is.
Oh boy. Count it. If you're drinking at home, that's drink one for the first pun.
I mean, making bank jokes, that makes no sense at all. Oh yeah.
That's
Did
money.
You hear that?
That's Moneyball.
Did you hear that? He said that makes no sense at all.
Sense. Yeah. Good.
There you go.
Yeah.
So no. My dad and I would go back and forth for really? For hours doing this to the point where my mom just goes, "We knew we were good." When we would hear from the kitchen, "Make your own damn dinner." when we're like, "Yes, we got some good puns going.
Got some good jokes going."
Yeah.
Cool. So then the and these kids, they like Hamilton. They're all, incredible kids that could use a boost, right?
And what we do, we get about 2,000 applications. We only select about 40. It's a national program.
Yeah.
So usually we'll have them from 20, 25, 30 states. So,
and these stories and these essays these kids write to even apply,
pretty awesome.
I mean, they're like stories you can't even fathom, quite honestly.
Some pretty gut wrenching stuff.
Yeah.
So we find the kids, and then the program then immediately starts. And beginning next year, it has three major areas: supplemental training, tailored mentorship programs, and internships. So there's internships, mentored programs, and these supplemental training. The supplemental training, it goes essentially from that point of time in which they get the award all the way through college.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We don't need to get into specific details here. Come up with a couple of ideas here on what it is, but I'll bottom line is that, well, let me, okay.
Yeah.
Empowerment, leadership, financial literacy, heritage, and something called transition. Transition, get them into college, keep them in college, get them out successfully. Empowerment, they write a statement of values, a vision statement, a mission statement. They put together a 7-year personal development plan, then we teach them to implement that through day planning and time management techniques. And leadership, we teach leadership from the point of view of kind of ethical dilemmas. You get situations where you can only do one thing and both of them are the right thing to do, and you're going to have to say no to one. And, you know, it's by going through this and then by maintaining contact with them, we found that we get some amazing results.
That's the big thing, is staying in touch with them.
That's it. We're finding that's about 80% of it.
Because after the first year when you get in, you do a leadership conference in Seattle, right?
Well, next year it'll actually start in New York between the junior and senior year of high school. A year later, they'll come to Seattle. A year after that, they go to Guatemala. And then
so this group is staying
later,
together each year.
Yeah,
that's
stay
amazing.
Together.
Yeah.
And then they'll go to Dallas. And there's different focuses on each of these leader
programs. And that's key because, like you said, the keeping up with them. Because anyone can go to one meeting, you know, or you see one motivational speaker or you read one pamphlet. But then if you don't follow up with that, and certainly when you're young, having kids around you, because peer pressure is such a big thing. If kids around you are saying, like, yes, this
positive
is
peer pressure,
these
yeah.
are the programs that we're involved in, and it's sort of becomes cool to achieve,
oh yeah,
mm-hmm. then they're more likely to do so. So yeah, I totally see why that's a key part of the program. I mean, have you had some major success stories from the first few years that you?
A couple of them, I mean, a lot of them. Oh, we've got, but let me tell you about one. It's pretty amazing. The internship, one of those three things I mentioned. No, mm-hmm. midway through the program, a woman whose first name is Kara goes to Marshall. Mm-hmm. Which is in West Virginia. She's from a dirt poor West Virginia background, and she really wants to get into the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't find, she's going to have to work. So the job of choice, it would probably be flip burgers at McDonald's. I mean, seriously,
mm-hmm.
she's trying to find something in the medical field. So she goes online and searches and finds this unpaid internship in Memphis with St. Jude.
Wow.
So she knew that we had a program so where you could apply for a grant from Hamilton. If you're a Hamilton scholar, you could apply for money to take on an unpaid internship.
Right.
She applied. It was given to her. So she goes there. Now she's at St. Jude. She's doing essentially clerical work with this group that's studying Parkinson's disease,
mm-hmm.
DNA, and that sort of isolating some stuff. And there's a stack, this is probably wrong, but it'll get the picture across, a stack of computer paper. We don't have computer paper like we did, but my vision was this 1 foot stack of computer paper. And she wonders what this is. It's about DNA research. And they said, we're doing this and this. She said, if you have some way I can look at this, you know, I'd love to take a crack. And I said, well, here's some things to do. Didn't think anything about it. She goes through in her spare time and isolates a gene that's associated with a certain kind of Parkinson. And as a result of that, she presented it. They were blown away. Not only does she finish her internship, but they hire her full-time after graduation.
You think?
And she has now just published a research paper along with some PhDs at St. Jude associated with this, which is a breakthrough in research. That would not have happened.
That's unbelievable.
That's probably the most wow.
I'll say.
There's others that are, I think, equally dramatic, but not in the terms of a holy smoke.
And and you're giving these kids like the confidence and also the attention of like, hey, you have value. You're worse. Like some of these kids are coming from places where they're not getting any validation, right?
They don't get the validation.
And that's so key for, I mean, you know, just it's human necessity. Like you need to. You know, you can have your own instilled work ethic and strive for things, but you need to see, you know, positive reinforcement.
Yeah, some sort of results.
Yeah, you know, you guys, I mean, I've been around you, Adam, for a long time, and your field is absolutely nuts. I mean, to a first approximation, it's impossible to succeed in it. I mean, you got 20,000 people trying to hit the brass ring, and it's 30 feet what is it? The carousel.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's really difficult.
Why do you got to make circus jokes around Brad?
me and my people are very hurt.
Sorry about that.
All good.
It is. It is. It's near impossible.
Well, yeah, but your whole career is a circus. For
yeah.
Yeah. The
advice I give to young comics or when they say like, I'm thinking about getting into, stand-up comedy, I say, okay, well, if you're okay with being poor, really poor, between 2 and 55 years, you can be a stand-up comic. Yeah. Like if you're okay with that, if you see that and go, all right, yeah, I can still do it, then okay.
Yeah, I think, Adam, you told me that if there's anything else you can do, do it.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yes. And if you have the inkling to do that other thing, then you're not, then this career is not for you because you can't have a plan B. Like I remember starting out and people, you know, and I'm sure every job has even in the financial world, the amount of uncertainty, right, as you're coming up. But like
financial world is nothing but uncertainty.
Yeah. And so like for us, it's like if you have a backup plan, then that all that's going to do is distract from the plan A. It's having a plan B is going to take away from your plan A.
Well, the reason I bring that up is, these young people are high achievers.
Yeah,
in schools frequently that are dominated by people that, in some respects, disdain achievement.
Yeah,
so they may be popular, but they're isolated and they don't develop a lot of the skills that you might develop if you came from a more affluent area
yeah.
or a more affluent thing.
Sure.
So staying with them, because some of the darn things, some of the things that cause people to fall off the brink are just plain cuckoo.
Oh, I mean.
I mean, you know, you just say, what on earth? Why did you quit college because of that?
Yeah. I mean.
It's avoidable.
One of my favorite jokes is a Bill Hicks joke. Where he talks about going, to the Waffle House, and the sort of country bumpkin waitress comes up to him, and Bill is reading a book, and she goes, "What you reading for?" And he looks up and goes, "So I don't end up here." Like, it's just, I'm trying to get out of here. Like, why are you trying to get mad at me for trying to get smarter? Like, I'm trying to better myself. So, and that definitely exists in schools, not just in today's time, but hell, when we were going to school, I'm sure back when you were going to school, kids that started to succeed, other kids would start to break them down to try to get them back to their level.
And there's always
sort of a war of achievement.
Yeah, and you guys have seen that because you know, when you're trying to get that brass ring, and people say, ah, come on, you know, you get discouragement all the time, and you know, it's just awfully tough when you really, really want to do something for yourself. You know where you want to go, but there's nobody there to help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these programs are very well-meaning, but they put a lot of money into short-term programs to kind of get you someplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's fine. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to knock anything, but we just find that putting our meat hooks on everybody and saying, we're there whether you like it or not, darn it. Well, unless they fire us, and they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm speaking metaphorically, but we're there for you guys. You know, and I mean, this election, for example, was tough on a lot of young people, especially young women of color. And if they had happened to have had serious issues in their background, abuse or something, it was even harder.
Yeah.
So our staff, they were, I can't tell you how great it was. They were on the phone night and day, it seemed to me, calling people and saying, how you doing?
Yeah.
Just that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's amazing how just that question can mean the world to people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're in such a fast world where we're on our phones and we're heads down and we're constantly worried about our own stuff. To have someone actually stop, take
check
time
in.
Out of their day and just go, how are you doing? And not in the casual, like, hey, what's up? Like, just how are you doing?
Not the Hollywood way where you're already walking away after you say it.
yeah, no kidding.
What do you find that you've you know, obtained as a person over the years that you feel like you can, you know, give back mostly in as far as experience to the kids that you come across?
Well, I don't know how much I can do. It's mainly setting up the structure and letting the staff handle most of it. But you just basically listen and speak from the heart about stuff. Mm-hmm. In my particular area of expertise, I've written the empowerment curriculum. I spent a lot of time in helping people develop a sense of vision. Vision is, who do you want to become? That's how we define that. And mission, what do you want to do or achieve? So being and becoming is a vision kind of sense, and doing and achieving is mission. And then the values, and values we divide into core principles, which you can get from a variety of things, religion or just early experiences that help define who you are. And a set of things that help you engage the world. How do you want to engage the world? How do you want to present yourself to the world? Those are values, too. So we help them structure these things. It's already there with most people, but it's sort of like chipping away at the diamond and making it work in a ring, as opposed to just kind of being some kind of rock that you look at and wonder what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like in stand-up, like, you know, Brad and I, when we came up, I'm sure, like, we had the natural funny in us, but then it takes, you know, even like, you know, he had a big name comic take him on the road and show him some ropes and give like little tidbits of advice and experience things. And it's like, and I had similar to that too with, you know, Bobby Lee and whatnot. And it's like, everybody needs that, you know, extra little introduction to, you know, just the, what it is that you're trying to get into.
Yeah. I had a question because you talk about having people of high moral character. I think that when a man dates a single mom and agrees to sort of be a substitute dad, that is one of the highest degrees of moral character I know, because you're taking on other kids that you did not have. Like, so when you started dating Puddin, did you look at Adam and his sister and be like, oh God, or were you encouraged?
Well, Adam was kind of a ray of hope, you know, but other than that.
Nice. Put it on a bumper sticker.
I didn't think of anything like that. I think, and to be fair, I mean, you mentioned guys doing it, but the door swings both ways.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Know? Yeah.
I think it's many respects, a lot easier for a man to step in that situation than it is for a woman sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, good. Now, did you, this might be weird because he's sitting right here, but did you have any weird times with Adam where he kind of looked at you and said, you're not my dad, like that kind of scenario?
I think the timing was kind of perfect. Like when you guys, well, you had converted to Judaism.
Yeah, I became a Jew about the time. I was in the midst of it when I met your mom.
That's right. And what was that? Do you remember the first like meeting you guys had or date ask out?
The first time we were actually helping a fellow,
Jeffrey, a fellow
that had serious Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I we were cleaning out his apartment. He had to go to he was a younger man who got Parkinson's, really a tragic situation. So your mom and I were helping him, and I said, oh, by the way, in the midst of taking out garbage, would you like to go to the symphony?
She looked at that man holding two bags of garbage and thought, that's my future.
Yeah. And to this day, that's my number one job, is taking out the garbage.
Well, I mean, that's what she knew you for. She said, well, there's a guy I can count on take out the garbage.
Yeah, that's the one thing I don't want to do.
Yeah.
I get the recycling, which is to take that out too, which is an added
bonus. Hey, bonus. You know what I mean?
We're going above and beyond.
Extra credit.
Pretty cool.
Mom, Puddin's been on the podcast twice. A fan
She's
favorite.
She's funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to say, what did you, obviously, like people say in relationships, like sense of humor is key. And you guys, which I love, you guys laugh a lot together and you guys have similar sensibilities. Like how early did you find that attribute? And
Laughing together?
Yeah.
Probably the first time I tried to help her clean out the closet. I mean, we have different styles in the closet.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's really a thing about a second marriage.
Yeah.
If you can't figure the closet out, I mean, you're in trouble you know, all of the past ghosts, everything is in the closet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, her ghost, my ghost.
Yeah.
And the ghosts don't know necessarily that you guys are falling in love. They're out doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So those closets are interesting. So, you know, I have one kind of style of putting stuff in there, and she has another one. So
yeah.
And it's
learning to adjust to the closet styles.
You got to adjust to closet styles.
Or the solution, buy two closets. two closets, two DVRs, two bathrooms.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Look, do you like food? Probably. You're a person. You have hunger desires. You like delicious food. Are you a busy professional couple or a large family that runs at a breakneck pace? Or somebody who, like me, just wants to start cooking more but doesn't have the tools or resources or is lazy as fuck and doesn't want to go to the store to get all the materials? HelloFresh makes all this shit easier and tastier and healthier than ever before. To enjoy the experience of cooking new recipes and eating together at home, all right? Basically, they allow you to create recipes and plan meals without doing the grocery shopping, because all that shit gets delivered to you, pre-measured, and delivered right to your doorstep so that you can cook and be a baller in your own home. Super easy, okay? Look, HelloFresh, they basically created this whole program so that people like me, like you, like Brad, who are using this, we like to cook, you know, but it's like we're so busy, we don't have time to go out to the store and get everything and then bring it home and measure it out, and just, it takes so much fucking extra time. HelloFresh gets that shit pre-measured all the ingredients for you, and then they send it to you to your doorstep, and all you gotta do is cook that shit up and enjoy it, all right? HelloFresh, they source the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities, so there's no food waste, all right? They have full-time registered dietitians who review each recipe to make sure they're nutritionally balanced, and guess what? They deliver all this shit to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, okay? Look, we all fantasize about being baller cooks in our own home, okay? Everyone sees Wolfgang Puck on TV when he's like, look at me, I made the new fanciest pizza that everybody loves and everybody wants to fuck me. And you're like, Puck, you're the man, dude. How did you get to that level? Well, he cooks and measures shit out. And guess what? You can do that too at home, but you don't have to measure it out because HelloFresh does it for you and they send it to your doorstep for free. For free is a big key here, all right? So do you want to start living life better and tasting all the good fruits and foods and veggies and meats that life has to offer? Go to HelloFresh.com and use promo code ALN35 to get $35 off your first week of deliveries and start living life the good way, man. I'm telling you, HelloFresh is the shit, dude. I used to hate cooking. Now I do it all the time because of HelloFresh. And at first it was like, all right, this is a sponsor for the podcast. I'll try it out. I actually love it. And my mom just came down to visit and we cooked up a storm. And she was like, this is such a great service. What is it again? I was like, HelloFresh, mom. She's like, what is it? I'm like, mom, I'm 2 feet away from you. I think you have hearing problems. She's like, I'm just high as fuck. Go to HelloFresh.com, promo code ALN35, and get $35 off your first week of deliveries and start tasting the better side of life. Now, Brad just got engaged. Do you have any advice?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Congratulations, Brad. That's really good.
Thank you, sir. And
so are you going to have 8 or 9 kids?
Oh, no, sweet Lord. hope she's not listening to this podcast. We're going to have children. We're planning on adopting eventually.
Okay.
Because not to get too serious, but the China had its one kid policy for a long time. Now it's a two child policy. And because you're limited by the number of kids you can have, there's when kids have slight disabilities, a lot of times are sort of cast aside or put into adoption so the family doesn't have to raise them. So we want to have an Asian dwarf baby.
An Asian dwarf baby.
That
Beyonce,
and,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that just gets you into college. like right on the essay.
You are double minority.
Yeah, yeah. When you're like Asian dwarf, you're like, oh, well, that, yeah, of course.
We need one of those.
Yeah, we need that one for the pamphlet. That
sounds like a superhero.
Look. Down on the ground. It's crawling, solving math problems very quickly with tiny hands. It's an Asian dwarf baby.
We had a Hamilton scholar who was blind.
Really?
I guess, is that okay to say blind?
Yeah, sure.
Visually
impaired. Her mother was blind.
Wow.
And we took her to Guatemala, and she rode a horse up this volcano.
Oh, my God.
And she actually was an equestrian. She jumped.
What?
Wow.
I mean, I don't know how she does it.
That's ultimate trust.
I mean, she went through the jumping course, you know, with the neat outfit and the hat and all that. And
sure, the most boring Olympic sport out there, but it's still it's cool.
And also one of the most dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
Boring, dangerous.
I don't know how that can happen. I don't know how a sport can be so boring yet so incredibly dangerous. Yeah. I'm not sure how that worked out.
By the way, that's ultimate trust in an animal. I fell off a pony at pony camp when I was 9, and I haven't been on a horse since. And she's jumping over volcanoes?
Yeah.
Well, not jumping over volcanoes.
Well, you don't jump over the volcano.
That would be something.
That sounds like a Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, that's...
And so I want to know, and so then when you... Because the timing was perfect, you know, for people who...
How old were you, Adam, mentioned, when they started dating?
I think I was about 18, 19, because I was just getting ready to go to Los Angeles for college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was... 99, 98.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was very, I got into the point where I was finally, like, wanting my mom to find somebody. Because, like, you go through that stage when they split up and you're like, any other person is, like, you know, not your...
It's a threat.
Yeah. And so I definitely single-handedly, you know, messed up a few of those as a kid, which, looking back, I'm glad I did so that, it would end up George. And I just remember like getting to that point where I was going to come to LA and I was like, oh man, now I'm at the point where you start to see your parent as a person and not as a parent and you go, I'm like, oh man, and you start to see how great, you know, in my case, my mom is. And I'm like, oh, she deserves to be happy and she deserves now I'm over being selfish about not, you know, wanting anybody else to step in, and I'm moving away to school
and
potentially.
You're leaving. Yeah. So you can't just have her alone in the house, just like hoping, like, well, Adam may come back today.
Yeah,
like that's not.
And she would, and to her credit, she was very adamant about me leaving. I was like, Mom, I might just go to University of Washington, and she's like, Nope, you're go. If you get into SC, you're going down there. You have to. And then you know, and then I meet you, and you take me to a Sonics game. I don't know if you remember when you took me to a Sonics game to ask her. To ask me, which was a cool move because I was kind of like the man of the house, I guess. And you asked me if you could ask her to marry you, which was a classy move. And I don't know, do you remember that I jokingly said like no at first? Do you even remember that? Or were you just so? I remember you looked over and it was during the game and it was a Sonics game and it was great. And you were like, Adam, and the reason I brought you here is I want to ask you to. If I can ask your mom, you know, I like her very much, and if I can ask her to marry me. And I go, no, I don't think so, George. And then there was like brief moment where there was a brief moment where your face just kind of went, wait, what? And then I said, no, of course, that would be amazing. And
Oh, gee.
I
think I was kind of at a blank. I remember the Sonic game.
Yeah.
And, gosh, Sonics. That's another thing.
Yeah. That was a classy move, though. That's, you know, that was the podcast.
Thanks, yeah,
was that, and I mean, you know, I couldn't have been happier.
Well, that's the way, yeah, that's the way you used to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, going back a couple of generations, if the dad said or no, you didn't do it.
I'm, oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so, what would you have done if I had said no?
Huh?
What would you have done if I had said no?
Well, we'd have had another talk.
What if I was like, I need to go to four more games? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you get season tickets, you're in.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's something that I recently did for my engagement. I called up my now fiance's uncle, who she considers to be her dad, and I asked for his permission. And that was scarier than asking her because, well, not the fact that the guy that her uncle is a multiple black belt and pretty much a grandmaster.
And could serious stuff
break anyone.
Yeah.
You know that guy. But for that reason, because like I felt like I can help her answer. I can make her want to marry me by being just a good dude. I don't have too much influence on him. Yeah. And if he says no. Well, crap! Now what the hell do I do?
He would make you cry, Uncle, right?
I mean, come on!
Man.
I mean,
that's tough. Right?
Oh, well done, sir. Well done. I love the puns so much that like I laugh and I hate them at the same time.
Oh yeah,
those are the best.
Those
are the absolute best.
Well, it took me a minute to adjust to that because I hadn't been around that pun world in a long time. And then George is just slinging them like they're, I mean, literally they're falling out of his pocket. There's that many puns ready to go. Like, I remember one of the first ones, you came to my apartment in senior year of college after when you guys came down to visit and I was doing a play. And there was some, for whatever reason, I was in some, you know, Bodunk, you know, LA South Central apartment, and there was a nail for whatever reason on the desk, and we just come from the show, and he picked up a nail and handed it to me, and goes, "Well, you really nailed the part." And my roommates are just kind of like, "Oh boy, how long is he going to be here?"
But stuff like that's fun. Those are great.
What I mean, do you? Who were the like comedy? Like, you know, who did you like growing up, and who do you like today? Like, what's comedically? Because you and Mom watch a lot of old movies, and there's a lot of old comedic actors.
Oh, we do now.
Yeah,
I don't think we did. I mean, that's something recent.
Yeah, of course.
And actually, a lot of the movies we like are before our time.
Yeah.
You know, I've got this list of dead actresses I'm in love with. You know,
Sure. You got that pull-out poster of Mae West?
No, not Mae West.
That's a copy.
Greer Garson is more my stuff.
Greer Garson? Yeah, I don't know who that is. I'll have to look that up.
Here, help us out. When you name an actress, compare it to a modern-day actress for us.
Meryl Streep.
Nice.
Okay.
It would be more like Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Jane. She's older, you know. Yeah. I tried to think of a younger one.
Like Natalie Portman, you had referenced.
Natalie Portman is that the way her latest stuff is, I mean, she's really incredible, versatile.
Yeah.
So her latest stuff where she shows real strength of character, that's kind of what
Greer Garson, redhead.
She was a redhead.
Look at that. I mean, sure. There you go.
Now there's a person who you talk about came into the business and had a vision. I mean, what happened with her, she grew up in Northern Ireland, and at about age three, her dad took her to this auction.
Hmm.
And next door, there was a kind of a show going on in the stage, and people were doing, it sounds like a kind of a vaudeville, a country vaudeville routine. And she got up and started yakking away at age three. And it made a big impression on her. She, from that moment, she wanted to do stuff. Well, she was very sickly and almost died as a kid. And
wow.
Didn't have any interaction with children until she was probably 12 or 13. But she was from this prim background, and her grandmother said, you can't go on the stage, when she said at age 12 or 13 she wanted to do it. So she held off till she was 31 to even start a career.
Late start. And for a female, that's even more difficult.
Well,
because
especially because 6 years later, she's playing a 16-year-old in Pride and Prejudice. You know, so.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So she had a baby face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so 3 years after she started, I mean, Louis B. Mayer,
yeah.
Bingo.
That's amazing.
Finds her in London, and you're it.
That's amazing.
Took her to Hollywood, yeah. Pretty amazing.
You and Mom always give me a hard time about the classics that I have not seen.
Yeah.
I would love to know, Brad, if you have seen some of these that I have also. Because you are a big TV movie watcher.
I do.
And I always am envious at how much more knowledgeable you are of the cinematic world.
Yeah.
I have seen Shanghai Nights twice in the theater, which I am...
you should be very proud of that.
And Jurassic Park.
I mean, 92
times. Everybody has got to see... You're not American unless you've seen Casablanca at least five times. You know?
All right. I'm on twice. So I got three more. Three more to sit.
I've still not seen it.
Bogey is kind of a, you know, he's this guy. You know, I remember the night well. The Germans wore gray. You wore blue. I mean, it's
classic.
You know,
why is it so classic? Why do I need to see it so bad?
It's
not to make you flip the table.
Why do you?
It's a beautiful.
Beautiful story.
Yeah, it's just a classic, beautiful story, and good acting, and it. Okay, if someone was saying, I'm going to start watching the NBA, and you'd be like, well, why should I watch the Showtime Lakers? It's like, because they influence so much.
Great way to put it.
Yeah, like, you have to watch certain things of the past, and you'll know this as a history buff. Like, you learn when you look about things that happened in the past, when you study the Richard Pryors, when you study the Rolling Stones, when you study things that happened in the past, then you gain an appreciation of current things because you know sort of how they developed and how and where they came from.
Right.
So yeah, I would say Casablanca especially. Go for it.
Casablanca was written by the script was written by two Jewish comics, and a lot of the stuff, I mean, came from a play, Everybody Goes to Rick's, I think was the name of the play, but these two, I've forgotten their name, but they if you look at the 50th anniversary of Casablanca, these two brothers talk about it, and they're just laughing because they came up with all these lines. They're presented seriously in the movie, but they're just dying laughing about them. I mean, that one, you know, she finally sees his love again after a long absence, and he says, yeah, I remember the day well. The Germans wore gray, you wore blue. They were just dying laughing because, you know, simple little line presented very, very seriously. But it was, to them, it was kind of comic. And it's funny how something serious can also have comedic overtones.
But yeah.
I think the reason that particular one is that here's a love story. You desperately want these two to get together. And they can't do it because there's a greater good they aspire to, and they can't do it. So that final ending, you know, where they go their separate ways, you know, they desperately love each other, but it's not.
Well, I guess I don't need to see it. Thanks for fucking. There you go. Yeah.
Also, Casablanca, maybe that and Star Wars, the most misquoted movie of all time.
Oh yeah.
Because everyone always says, oh, the famous line from Casablanca, play it again, Sam. That's never said in the entire movie. It's like the same thing with Star Wars. People think the most famous line from Star Wars is, Luke, I am your father. Darth Vader never says that.
What?
He never says, Luke, I am your father.
What does he say? I am your significant guardian. I am your...
He says something along the lines of, look inside yourself, you know it to be true, I am your father. He never says, Luke, comma, I am your father.
That's a
nerd alert.
That's me. Don't care.
A 20th century version of fake news. Oh, my God.
There should maybe be a required viewing in for Hamilton scholars.
Well, like actually, I think a lot of for Hamilton scholars, I've thought I'd love to get on TCM with some of these scholars.
Yeah, yeah. Turn class
here's
movies.
What here's what you do is you get them to talk about these old movies. I'll give you an example. Lana Turner and Imitation of Life, 1958. This is about a white woman who wants to be an actress, her white daughter, and then a maid who they meet early in the picture, and her daughter who passes for white. So the maid is black. Mm. So it's a story of these four people as they move through time. And it's gut-wrenching, and it's a depiction of mid-20th century race relations. And you learn so much from that. Even from Casablanca, the relationship between the piano player and Rick.
Yeah.
I mean, at one time, Elsa, the love interest, calls the piano player boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's accepted.
Yeah.
Now, this is 1940, right? So to look at that is to sense how far we've come. And, you know, it's a great movie, but for many millennials, especially looking at that, that's the first thing they see.
Yeah.
They don't see the love story. They see that
the language.
Here's a African American being called boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then today, if an African American girl can pass for white, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge thing in 1958.
Yeah.
And she would, if they found out, oh my God, you know, she couldn't be. And of course, she was dating one guy, this nice looking white guy, and he winds up beating her up.
Yikes.
In the movie, because when he finds out that she had not told him.
Yeah.
She's African American, or partially at least.
Yeah. And
crazy.
And so you could watch movies like that from the past and go like, wow, look how sort of far we've come, and at the same time, how far we still need to go.
We got a long way to go.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go.
We always will, though, right? I mean, it seems like there's, constant evolvements and changes for the better, but then it's, with every step forward, I feel like there's a couple back.
Yeah, we can go backwards. There's no question about that.
Yeah, no kidding. I wanted to ask you, because Adam told me that you went to West Point, and I have such a respect for not only just the military, but certainly the people that go through there. Because that's the officer training college, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why did you attend West Point? Was that a family influence, or was that your own desire?
No, it was my own choice. And I was less interested looking back on it in the Army,
mm-hmm.
but I really admired the tradition and the program at the Academy. And I love that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was not very well suited for the military afterwards, but getting through West Point, I mean, once I got in, I actually enjoyed it after the first year. It was pretty tough that first year.
How so?
Well, I'm not an athlete. And
again, not a rapper, not an athlete. Your attitude.
The first term, you got to box. Uh-huh. I mean, you know.
My God, where's the footage of you boxing?
My sparring partner was a guy named Sam Champy, who's an all-American tight end. This guy outweighed me. He was taller than I. His reach was 6 inches longer, or maybe a foot longer, for all I know. Thank God he was a gentle giant, you know. And he only But the problem is, a light punch from Sam would still send me back 10 feet.
Sure. Yeah. In this corner, Sam Chappie. In this corner, George Cox.
Yeah. So, man, I don't know how I got through that class.
Wow. Is that a standard class at West Point, or was it at the time boxing?
They still do it. Yeah, boxing was a big deal there.
I mean, hand-to-hand combat. Makes sense.
Yeah. Man, boxing, wrestling, gymnastics, and everybody
gymnastics.
Had to take even the basketball players had to take gymnastics. That
wow.
was That was something else.
Can you still do a cartwheel?
Yeah, how's your back handspring?
Well, I had to do it on the side horse.
Horse.
You know, do that thing and back and forth a couple of times, and I was able to do it. However, I think there were a couple of times I got on that thing in which anything that might be construed as productive with the opposite sex would not have been able to achieve for a while.
What a great PC that, way to break whoa. That down.
That is the fanciest way I've ever heard. I got hit in the balls. That's the most exquisite way I've ever heard that put.
It would send your balls to the wall.
Oh, man.
That's fantastic.
It was an interesting program.
And was there any particular reason why you didn't pursue the military after your time at West Point?
I'm too entrepreneurial mm-hmm. for an organization like that. Mm-hmm. And at the time, coming out of Vietnam, I didn't. It was a struggle to figure out where I really fit in.
Sure.
And so I think a combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided to go back and do some other stuff.
And with your involvement in the financial world, I do have to ask this question, and I'm sure it's boring to everyone else, but I invest a lot, so I've got to know. Do you subscribe to the Warren Buffett school, where you invest in things that you enjoy, invest in things that you like?
Yeah, very much so.
All right,
that's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's so basically, Adam.
So Brad's investing in Star Wars and yep. cookies.
Yep. Disney and Keebler. Got a lot of money in Disney and Keebler.
Just make sure you invest in the Coke that you drink. That's really important.
What about that world? I want to know. Have you been able to apply it to other aspects of life? Just the financial world in general, like lessons learned, life lessons, or the way you deal with people.
Well, the main thing in finance, I think, is to recognize that there are no magic bullets.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is, you're dealing with uncertainty. There is no certain way to do things. So what you have to do is play the percentages mm-hmm. and work the percentages so that you make appropriate changes that make sense, as opposed to take risks all the time. If you're going to take a risk, understand the consequences. That's really it. Kind of a jumble of things, but
yeah.
Don't just say, hey, I want to invest, and you put your money down a variety of rat holes and expect anything other than rat feces.
I mean,
start simply.
I mean, it's people think it's a complicated world, and a lot of times it can be, but if you just kind of simplify it and, like I said, like invest in things that you use and you like and you enjoy, then yeah, you might come out on top.
One hope.
Yeah. and then Adam says you're also an old car guy.
I got a few old cars. We're going to restore. My son and I are going to restore other, but Austin.
Okay.
We're going to restore a 1929 Franklin, which is going to look a little bit like one of those cars out of Downton Abbey, the one that comes up. It was a maroon and black sedan that came up and took all the people to the rail station.
Yeah.
It's going to look a little bit like that when we're done. It's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah. As soon as you said that my son are going to restore a car, I'm like, what?
How dare you?
Adam can't change his oil. What's happening? Wow.
That's a problem. Most people today don't know how to change windshield wipers.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't. If I was on a show called Change a Windshield Wiper for $1 million, I would lose. Did you ever want to go on any sort of game show or anything like that? You and Mom both are very
not really.
Really?
No.
If you could go on one game show, what would it be?
What game show?
Like Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. Do you feel like you would succeed at one of those?
I
never thought about it. Wow.
I haven't. I'm stumped. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm stumped.
There's a picture of a 1929 Franklin.
Wow.
It's a sedan, but yeah, that's what it'll look like. It'll look more like the one in the rear there.
That's incredible. Okay. Yeah, that one, and what about the whole old car world is just so fascinating to you?
I don't know. It's just kind of fun, and yeah. I just enjoy driving them. Probably it's an ego thing. People – I had one. It was this fish market. I have a Austin Healey.
Yep.
And it's a 3,065. Beautiful car. So I'm driving this thing down Greenwood Avenue,
yeah.
And I come up to a stop sign, and this woman who looked – she was big enough to roll out toward me. She comes running out onto the car. She says, with a cell phone, "What is that car?" So I tell her, and she's screaming at her husband. And she came out with a fish. I don't know what she was going to. I thought she was going to throw a salmon at me or something. But, you know,
it's a new school crime fighter.
Store. Right, right, right.
You know the one down in Greenwood? It's got a wooden salmon. With yeah. The mouth just always going up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
So she came out and, yeah, stuff like that. But, you know, you kind of, that's funny.
Oh, so she screamed at you because she was impressed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I it's a little bit of an ego.
Well, and one thing to kind of come full circle here, one thing that you can kind of relate keeping up a classic car to your charity is your charity is not a one and done with these kids. You stay with them their entire lives, and the same way with these old cars, you can't just be like, all right, I bought an old car, it looks really great, I'm going to drive it all the time. Like, no, it's constant upkeep because they are old cars.
Well, these are young kids, and mm-hmm. I don't know that they're constant. The tie-in is there's a reason they call a charity a nonprofit.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So we're always trying to. We do need to raise money and all of that. So, but the cars. I mean, that's definitely a nonprofit thing. Even if you sell it for a higher price, the probability is the amount you put into it. So it's got to be a labor of love.
Right. Exactly.
See, my problem would be if I had some funds to invest in old transportation modes. It would be like, you know, like old hot air balloons. You know, I would collect. I want to be the weird guy that collects
hot air balloons.
Yeah.
You would have like the Flintstones car.
Wow.
It'd be like, okay. Foot power.
I mean, that's a great idea. Maybe that's your next collectible.
That's something.
You do say it's an ego thing. It's like, have you ever thought about just driving down, like, you know, in just a t-shirt, blasting We Are the Champions down Greenwood Avenue?
Well, maybe not in a t-shirt. You could do that. You're, you know, in a t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I would fit the bill on that. But it's interesting. We're doing a lot of things. We're probably doing too much right now. The big activity outside of family and still winding down my financial service stuff is Hamilton. But I tell you.
And these galas, too, that you guys put on are unbelievable, where these big nights at the end of the leadership week.
Yeah.
And the speakers that you get to come and the people that invest their time and that really, you know, have a positive impact on these kids and that initial first program to you know, give them an idea of what's in store for the rest of the program. And people can donate, right? And where can they?
Go to hamiltonscholars.org and... you can donate there, or you get the address and send in a check. What we're really trying to build up now is donors that put in a little bit every month. Mm-hmm. You know, 10, 25, 10,000. That works too.
Yeah,
we don't want to. We won't turn $10,000 a month.
Yeah. No, we want $10 a month, not your $25,000 donation. How dare you? There's a big picture of Puddin'. Right there on the front with a lot of the kids.
She's been very involved.
And then
been very involved.
That looks like you in a top hat.
I'm in a top hat.
Yeah.
I
that's classy.
He's got the hat game on lockdown.
And a bow tie. I want people to know that. Top hat and a bow tie.
Yeah, the top hat. Top hats are fun. I've got a collection of hats now.
Yeah.
I succumbed to the world of hats. And I have a... Okay. I've got my top hat.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Twilby. I've got
what'd you call me?
A Twilby.
What is that?
It's a fedora with a narrow brim.
Oh, that's right.
And all a fedora is a Twilby with a wide brim.
I like it because I mean, I'm not wearing it now, but I just got a fedora about maybe 2-3 months ago, and I'm pretty stoked.
You look good
on
in a fedora.
He looks fedora.
I wore my fedora in today.
You did actually. Yeah.
And I got a white one too, which is for summer. And my favorite though. You know, I can only wear it with a top coat, is a Homburg.
A Homburg?
Homburg, H-O-M-B-U-R-G.
What is that?
Well, it's round on top. Think of a bowler.
Okay.
Okay? Kind of round.
Yeah.
And then cleft in the middle, but symmetrically cleft.
Yeah.
Whereas a fedora is not, and it's kind of turned up on the side. So it's a pretty, and
there it is.
There. Winston Churchill's wearing it.
There it is on Winston Churchill, and if it's good enough for the Prime Minister of England,
there you go.
Good enough for anybody. Yeah.
You're gonna have to start smoking cigars too, George.
I don't do the cigar thing, but I do the Holmberg thing.
There you go, man.
I do. What do you, mom being so involved in Hamilton? What has she brought that's been
she
nice?
She does. You know, she's a social worker.
Yep.
So she does one. There's one session at our leader week that we get calls, we get letters 5, 6, 8 years later saying it was the most important one session they've ever had. And what it is, it's when life throws you a curve. And so the scholars get together and they share some of their deepest, quite frankly, difficult moments. And it bonds them as nothing else. And your mom leads that. And she's become a surrogate mom to 400 kids because of that. So it's a very, very important thing. The thing about it, you get all these kids from all of the United States. They get together. They don't, they're unique in their community. They come together and they say, hey, I didn't realize there are people just like me elsewhere. And then they share these moments, and it's revealing. You know, when frequently, if I've had a best friend or when I've connected with them, it's because somebody says, George, let me tell you something about myself. And they share, and they open up, and they trust you with that. They trust you with that moment. And that's when that deep level of friendship occurs. And because of that, these people, when they come together, they don't let go. They don't let go.
I love
and that becomes a huge thing. At that point, even though we stay connected with them, the most important thing is they can stay connected with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very big thing. We had a situation. I'll give an example of how this works. There's a young woman from Alaska who was homeless, parentless in Alaska. One of the top students in her high school, and she's living in the middle of winter in a car. All right.
Wow.
She wins the Hamilton Award. Separately, there's a young man in Ohio who happens to be half Egyptian, half Somali, born in Egypt, moved here as a very young child, and his father dies, and he's now the sole support of his family. Very top student. He wins the award. They come together in Seattle. They meet. They become good friends, you know. And they've talked with each other over the years. They've both made some mistakes, but right now, the young woman has graduated from college. She has a child. Yes, it was out of wedlock, but darn it, she's making it. She's got an incredibly responsible job with a high-tech company in a marketing department. The other fellow, the young Muslim fellow, has decided that in his rather rural area of Ohio, mm-hmm. he thought it would be a good idea if he went to people and said, if you want to get to meet a Muslim, I'm your guy, and I'd be happy to talk to you, and I'd like to get to know you. So here, mm-hmm. there's a picture I have of the two of these people together. I don't think either one of them would be where they were without the other person. And this fellow now in Ohio is working with the mayor of Hamilton, Ohio, to make, I believe it's Hamilton. It's in. He will graduate soon from Miami, Ohio, with a program to try to bring people together so they can greater understand their differences. But again, it's these two very different people who understood each other and shared their own inner secrets, and they're like brother and sister.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I'm most proud of when you see that. Sure, it's nice. I mean, I'm so incredibly awestruck by a young woman who winds up in and helps find a cure for Parkinson's or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what really changes the world are people who see something from a totally different sphere, who comes together and they get to know each other. They know their deep, difficult moments and their strengths. Get to know each other so that they can share and reinforce the strengths and minimize the weaknesses. That's what true friends do, and that's what we're doing at Hamilton.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we get scholarship money. Most of these people graduate without any debt. Mm-hmm. We help them. We do that. But creating that kind of friendship, you know, one of the greatest books in the English language, novels.
It's Goosebumps.
Goosebumps. Yeah. That's a good one. But this one will give you Goosebumps.
Okay.
Middlemarch by Marianne Evans. You ever hear of Marianne Evans?
No, I have not.
Well, the reason you haven't heard Marianne Evans because in the 19th century, you couldn't publish as a woman. Her name is George Eliot.
Oh,
most people
okay.
have heard of George Eliot.
Okay.
But at the end of the book, Middlemarch, she says of the heroine of the book that the likes of you and me, and I'm paraphrasing, is better because many people have done heroic things through time that have supported our lives today, people that live unrecorded in unmarked tombs. And that's kind of, I hope these two young people live in tombs that everybody knows where they're at someday,
yeah,
you know, 100 years from now. But if they don't, America will be much, much better because they have come together and lived a life ethically and with integrity and lived in a way that has been uplifting to the people around them. And, you know, the final analysis, you can't do much better than that.
Yeah. Amen. Well, and, you know, seeing how you guys are with these kids, like, firsthand from all the, you know, the leadership conferences I've been to and just, you know, the some of the fun activities you guys set up, it's like, it's really, I mean, man, it's, I definitely have been inspired from seeing it firsthand. And, you know, and I mean, you know, it's pretty great. And, you know, Brad can attest to this too, having parents that you, like, genuinely look up to as not only being great people, but, like, you know, what you've done with it and the effect you've had on these kids and people and their families and, you know, and our family and me is pretty, I feel very fortunate that, to have you as a dad, I guess.
Hey, man, yeah, that's the biggest compliment you could play. You say to me.
And I do want to say, because she'll probably listen to this, and she's been very excited for it and been texting me all day, but we all know, and Brad knows Puddin' very well,
yep,
that she might be the biggest overfeeder and nagger of all time, but overlover at the same token. But I want to know, what is it that that made you fall in love with Puddin', and what do you love most about her in this current day?
First thing is she cares deeply about people around her. Secondly is she has impeccable honesty and creativity. And the third thing, I guess, is she's just a kick. I mean, yeah. And when she's not good making advice. Me laugh, she's kicking me to get the garbage out.
There you go. Good advice for all the people out there. Yeah. Be a kick.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
I don't know. How do you? I don't know.
What, it just works.
Know, you know, you see these things in a movie, and actually, this is one of the most, love at first sight in a movie.
Yeah.
Those scenes are probably some of the more real things in all the movies. And how, can you explain it? No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there was it. But you remember like a moment or a date or something when you're like, all right,
something,
this is
gonna, something clicks. And yeah. There's a groundswell of stuff and then something clicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have no clue.
Yeah.
But it happened.
Social butterfly, too. That woman can have a good time.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
You know, the Titanic could be going down, and she's still being like, does anybody want any more meatloaf?
Yep.
Well, I will say this. We've had a lot of actors, comedians, all people of all sorts on these podcasts. But we've had Puddin' on twice. We've had my dad on once. Now we've had you on. These are some of my favorites. Yeah. And I would encourage everyone out there listening that to sit down and have an opportunity where you have a long form conversation with either your parents or whoever you consider your role models, because you really learn a lot. You learn things and you learn insights into how they became who they are and probably why they raised you the way they did. So I would say to everyone listening, sit down. You don't have to have the microphones. You don't have to have the subscribers or the devilish good looks that we all enjoy. but just have a conversation with your parents, long form. And
you learn a lot when you have genuine interest in people, which I think we all do, which is why this was so fun. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
This was your first podcast ever.
What does podcast mean?
Well,
Well, way to end it with a senior moment.
What is a podcast?
Well, it's a radio program without the radio. I mean, with the radio or something like that.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
A podcast is an extension of it. Yeah, without
the
radio.
The more things change, the more they remain the same.
Yeah.
There it is.
Wow. Meanwhile, back on the radio. When I was 10.
Oh, boy.
It took 30 minutes to go to my grandmother's house from Chelsea, Oklahoma to Claremore.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we always went about 3:45, 3:00, 4:00 in the afternoon. And they had 15-minute radio shows. And I remember listening to Lorenzo Jones on the radio and The Shadow. and things like that.
Oh, yeah,
he had all these things. 15-minute episodes.
See, yeah. Those guys, but see, Lorenzo, without Lorenzo Jones, there'd be no Adam Ray and Brad Williams About Last Night podcast.
Lorenzo
Jones. So basically what we're trying to say, the entire thing of this podcast, the entire goal was for us to do a long-worded thank you to Lorenzo Jones.
Yeah, hey, Lorenzo
Jones. Or Buster Brown.
And I'm glad we did
it. Buster Brown. I live in a shoe. My dog Rags, he lives there too. I still remember this stuff. Good grief.
George, thank you for being here.
Thank you
very
much.
This was amazing.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know.
But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that
Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get through the fucking day. Just follow us on Twitter at Funny Brad, and I'm at Adam Ray Comedy. This has been the About Last Night podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamy Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.